Hello and welcome to another edition of Classic Black Dude Podcast. K Pasa, how you doing? Au revoir, down. That's goodbye. I mean, bonsoir. Yeah, the French shit. I've been to Montreal before. That's the closest I ever been to niggas in Paris. What's happening? It's a lot going on right now. I'm so excited to be back here. A lot's been going on. I've been at weddings. This is comedy wedding season, so I've been at comedy weddings. Been having a good time. A lot of new things going on. We're talking about some great things today. GQ just put out a thing, New Masculinity. We're going to talk about that. Princeton giving away reparations. Yes, Phil, Uncle Phil's alma mater is giving $27 million that we're going to have to split up 14 million ways, depending on what you identify as far as black or not. A lot of things going on with me, and I'm just in a good place, man. On a personal note, my mom was sick recently, and I know that took like a super serious turn, but that's the thing about a microphone. You just kind of say everything that's going on, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm way more comfortable talking to however many people are listening than just like a one-on-one conversation at a restaurant. That's why I don't date, really, because I'm just not good at it. I'm not trifling or anything like that. I'm just not good at dating. But anyway, this is Classic Black Dude with your host, Clark Jones, a.k.a. Pod Strickland. Today on the show, I'm very excited to have our guest here.
Kenny DeForest.
For the people watching the video, there's a white guest who is super late. Super late. So, like, man, I wish we had. We're going to have to do, like, some CGI. We're going to have to CGI somebody in and just give him white man opinions. We're going to speak for Kenny. But who is here, who I'm very excited about. Sorry if I sound like Stephen A. Smith. It's my boy, David Borey. The G is silent.
Hey.
The G is super silent, man.
Yes,
and
he's
here, and I'm so excited because, like, it's one of those things, like, from the outside looking in, people assume that all black comics know each other. They don't assume all black people know each other.
Yeah.
Then if it's a black comic, it's assume all black comics. And then if it's, I call it alt black everything.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's like a catch-all.
That's my terminology for anybody who kind of is under the Hannibal Buress umbrella. Which, look.
Man, we are all
sons. We both
sons
are.
Of, yo,
we,
100%.
It's undeniable.
There's like 15 of us who are all like.
It might be more than. I mean, what's the criteria as far as like.
I mean, if you do slow rhythm comedy you're not white, then yeah.
If
Hannibal had something to do with that.
If you're like, if the premise of your joke is super low and then the punchline just goes up to another level, then you're under that Hannibal umbrella.
You know, his name is Hannibal. We all like
so I've heard.
We all watched it. I did. I know. I so much.
It really is like, man, his first album is, you know what? This is a new thing. I know it's always been like, man, you can't compliment somebody too much. No, I don't give a damn. His first album is a masterclass in joke writing.
Yeah.
So many comics.
He's very good at it.
It's like it's just like boom.
He also
boom,
is
boom.
Like, he's also like on the back end. Like, I got my first agent because of Hannibal.
That's what the word on the street is, and everybody talks about that in like a passive-aggressive way.
Like, no, I mean it as a good thing.
You are, but I mean, comics who are not David, and they're like, man, Hannibal got him an agent. And everybody's like, okay, how you feel about that, though?
Oh, I don't
it's
know.
It's so much competition
in
comedy.
I don't know what to say about that.
You ain't got to say nothing. You ain't even got to comment on it.
I don't know if he, like, I did the work. Like, he passed my shit along.
Nah, bro. He signed you.
Yikes.
To WME.
Yikes.
He signed you.
Yikes.
To Endeavor. Is that who you are? Are you with?
I'm with ICM.
They're good.
Yeah, and it's the guy. Hannibal has since fired the guy.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's fired. Well, we'll get Hannibal on the podcast.
Yeah. I don't want to tell his story. I don't even know it.
What I will say, beyond comedy, as somebody who's watched him for 10 years at this point since I started comedy, nobody shouts out, people don't really know his business acumen. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it ain't
man.
Even fuck the jokes.
It's crazy when you see guys like that and then you didn't even know that before. Like, I've been touring for Eric Andre. Come catch me on the North American leg of the tour.
Oh shit, Sarah Sperm too, or just you?
Just me now.
Okay.
Sarah had done the first half, and then
you
I'm doing
this. You took a white woman's job. Damn.
Finally.
Damn, finally. Dude,
finally,
new masculinity.
Man, new masculinity.
Yeah,
but when I watch him, it's that, like, I'm like, man, oh, you're where you're at because you're very savvy.
Cause you're on your shit. But yeah. Like, that's so the juxtaposition of that with what people see on stage. And
yeah,
what,
they think
like,
he's like an idiot.
Oh, just like, yeah. Can I pay you $3 for this tour? He's like, yeah, man, I'm crazy. Give me beer and cocaine. And that's not like these guys. That's what I watch for in a, like a mentor, somebody look at. Comedy gonna be, that's the art. It's gonna be what it is. But like, how do you go about your business? And them two dudes, like 100%. They go about their business.
They're both
in a
doing
very,
well.
Like, there's stories in Chicago of like with $15, and Hannibal's like, yo, I need my bread. Like, you got a story about when he came, then you have him in.
Oh, when we were
Portland,
in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Or no, San Diego. He tweeted about it, but it was like, it wasn't a money thing though. It was just like, the venue was just not doing what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And he pulled the plugs on the weekend shows.
He just didn't do it.
Yeah, and I had never seen anybody do that.
Didn't you guys get him in San Francisco too for like $1,000?
Oh,
then...
we got him for $1,000, and then he got some more money out of us.
Okay, right. That's what I mean. Like.
Or we had him in Oakland for $1,000. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. Oakland. I knew it was
yeah,
the
back,
Bay, but
yeah, back when I was like, because when we got him, I was so new. I was like, yo, dudes are getting $1,000 for
one
night.
Was that impressive when you find out?
I couldn't believe we were giving him $1,000 and some alcohol, and I was like, what?
It's crazy. Like, this is why the world is like, fuck the middle class, or like, because you're either getting too much money or you ain't getting shit.
It's yeah, no, comedy, it's a bad, it's rough, man.
You're never making exactly what you're worth. You're
either, you have no money until you have good money.
And then it's over, it's too much money. Not too much as in you don't
kinda,
need it, but it's like,
kinda,
wait, you paying me what?
Yeah,
to do?
Yeah, like.
It's an odd thing, so like, I've seen it more now in L.A., and I feel like, I don't like to talk about specifics of money too much with people, because I've never, it's. More than times than not, least to something bad. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
like, do you talk specifics with friends when they're like, hey, man, well, how you doing out here?
But there's also, like, a level of, like, we need that transparency because a lot
okay.
of people aren't talking about it and a lot of people are getting screwed.
True.
Because of that, especially via whatever your first job is or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it is, like, a tough line. I think to walk.
It's
because like and it's like, just know that being on TV pays no money for stand-up.
But writing for TV
pays a bunch of
pays
money.
The, oh my god! Like I
don't do it, but boy, I hear about it.
But you've done like ESPN,
yeah,
like shit like that. Like you did the ESPYs, right?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
that a good paying gig?
Yeah, I think they lowballed me probably.
See, because you ain't know.
Because I didn't know, and I had not done. I also didn't enjoy the experience of it.
Because you're not a sports dude. Is that what it was?
I am enough, and it was. I'm not a. I just, man, you're writing those jokes for NBC or ABC or whatever.
And for Peyton Manning.
Yeah, who had just won a Super Bowl for the Broncos, so I was very excited.
Oh, okay.
Like, we got to meet him and stuff. It was just like, he came in and. Can I talk about that, right?
You can talk about anything.
He came in and he was like, I don't want to make jokes about the Ball family. And I was like, well, that was my whole packet, dog.
Wait, he didn't want to talk about Lonzo and...
He didn't want to disparage any athletes.
Oh. So what did he want to disparage? Owners?
I don't... No, it was...
he definitely didn't want to talk about owners.
It was difficult. It was just not... That's just not the way that I'm creative the best is all.
It's different, man. That's one of the things, and Patrice talked about golden handcuffs. You know what I mean? Where like, yeah, you get a lot of money for writing, or for even ascending in comedy, because there's comedians you never heard of, and people are like, oh, you're a failed comic because they don't see you all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that dude makes $3 million a year. Ralphie May was making $2 million easy off just doing stand up,
yeah.
and roast battle was like icing. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
That wasn't even his cash cow because
exactly.
it's like Comedy Central pays for a lot, so motherfuckers ain't getting. That's why Netflix was so crazy with what they were paying. And it was a big, you know, they had a big rift because, like, Comedy Central can't afford to. I don't know what they can afford, but they wasn't paying no motherfuckers the same price for less time. And it's just a different thing.
Yep.
It's a different thing. Money is a. it drew a lot of comics over to what Netflix is doing, but they're reducing now. They're not putting out as many specials. They're like,
I think that's probably for the best, right?
I would think so, but because
tell the truth, who gives a fuck about a special?
Yo,
right now,
but
like,
yo, they paid Dana Carvey $10 million, and I give a fuck.
I believe that, but like, we're not gonna get Dana Carvey. Who, man, this is
they front loaded.
Hot.
This is
take.
Hot. This
hot
is
hot take right now. It's only old guys and old men and women getting money. Who's our age who's getting dough?
In
for
stand-up,
a special.
For a special, who's our age? It's who's younger than us. See, we're in the middle.
How old are you right now?
I'm 36.
I'm 32. So you think, yeah, there's people younger.
If you're 24, like, and here's what's
if you're 24, I hate your comedy.
Fuck, it's trash, but it doesn't matter. and you only understand comedy money as a great thing. Like, you don't even know, like, what's a drink ticket?
I just got
a half a million.
I was sleeping on fucking couches for years.
It's
breaking
so
teeth, eating
it's
fucking
so
popcorn.
Funny. It's so funny to see, and this is how I know, because I joked with you about this. This is how I know a comedian's getting money or about to get a big check when they post some sort of struggle before. Like, because the following week, it'll be like, yo, get my own special. But the week before, they was like, man, y'all don't even understand, man. This is crazy. I was sleeping on the, like the futon with the cockroaches.
Yeah.
It's like, you kind of, you're humbling.
You're humbling.
So you can brag hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Next
no, it's
week.
A setup for the flex.
It's a setup for the flex?
Yeah,
it's
100. It's
every,
like the... It's
yo.
The before picture so you can hit them with that after. 100%.
100%. Yo, this is an insight. If you see a comedian talking about, they struggle.
Anybody who's like, I was on the train.
Just do. Like, man, I moved to New York and I ain't had no money. Yeah. Like I couldn't even afford. Y'all had the train. Y'all had it that good? I was like, man.
Oh, man.
I posted my account balance, but I ain't posted. I just took the screen grab. But
and
like,
then, bam, I'm in Paul Blart 3.
Yo, but now, me on the set of Coming to America too,
mm-hmm.
which you think
is fine, man.
How you think that movie's gonna do?
Boy,
you excited about it?
No, I don't really like reboots like that.
But this is a sequel.
No, I think it's. I want it to be really good because, like, man, that movie is like in my heart. Like growing up, I watched it so much, so I do want it to be good, but it's like 20 years later. What are you talking about? When is that ever cool?
Well, Jermaine Fowler's the new prince.
He's Hakeem?
He's the son of Hakeem.
Who's Arsenio?
The friend.
Oh, because it's number two. So it's
coming to America too.
So he's Hakeem's son.
He's Hakeem's son or grandson.
And he's just like from New York now?
He just lives in New York, but he's still African.
If you're
Zamunda.
African though, and you grew up here, you're from here.
I'm African
and I grew up here. Like
you were born and raised here.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna ask you about that too because there's a new thing. I don't know if you heard about
the Eidos.
Not the Eidos, but there's a new show on CBS written by Jeannie Yashier that I love. Abby Shola. I don't quote me on this and don't counsel me. I love Abby Shola and. There was a big Twitter uproar because one of the characters, Abby Shola, is Nigerian, and she says, like, American black men are at the bottom of her dating pool because she just kind of goes in saying basically we ain't shit.
Yeah.
And it brought up the divide between people of African descent and African Americans, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like that was taught to us on purpose. Like, in your family...
I mean, who do you think taught it?
who else? The white man who didn't show up today.
Yeah, right? He's got a lot to answer
I feel
for.
Like they...
I don't know. Truthfully, do you feel like that? I don't think they care about that like that. The division between Africans and African Americans, I think that was put on us by those two people. White people don't know that there's a rift between that.
I feel
you know
that...
What I'm saying?
I feel that if we, I have no empirical data on this. Let me preface
me
it with
either.
That.
I can barely read.
I'm
this is all
in here, right? I don't know if this mic is on or even not. Three white men helped me put this together. They just picked me up off the street. Yo, my account was negative dollars, right? And I'm just like, man, how am I gonna make it? New podcast. But I don't every I'm cool with all the Africans. Most people, a lot of people assume that I'm West African, and I am down the line. But
I mean, we're all West African.
We are. This is so true. They didn't go.
I mean,
they,
I have so many theories, but I'm from Sierra Leone. Like, oh, I feel like shit. Sierra Leone, Freetown especially, encapsulates what the black diaspora is more than maybe any
is that
other
where,
place
is
in
that
the
where
world.
The door of no return is?
The what?
The door of no return. You know, that is like a, it's like an infamous door, like the last door that the slaves walked through before they got on the boats.
Oh, I don't.
I think that's
know
Sierra Leone.
That. It might be. It's like Amistad was the Timni people or the Mende people. Mende or Timni. It's the two biggest groups there. But it's like, it was like, but the whole point of it is like, Sierra Leone was founded by the Portuguese and they couldn't hang. And then it became a British colony. It's just, okay. Truthfully.
I
but then it,
be,
then it became, Freetown was, it was freed slaves from Europe.
Okay.
The Nova Scotians, who were the people who fought for the British in the Revolutionary War, they were the black people who fought for the British in the Revolutionary War because the British told them that they would receive land if they fought for them. And
so
then
wait,
they, and
wait, hold on. So like Nova Scotians as in Canadians?
In Canada, there was a settlement of black people that the British people gave up there. The Nova Scotians went to Sierra Leone, and then the Maroons from the Caribbean, which was basically just like a bunch of wild black people that they couldn't control, moved there too, and then mixed with the local cultures, and that's like what Sierra Leone is.
So they so did. Like, so people did return back.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it was also when the British outlawed slavery, they were sniping boats. So boats would be leaving the West Africa, and the British would shoot them down and bring those people also back to Sierra Leone.
Oh, so they were some riders.
So, yeah, but it's like, also it's like, so like, I feel like, in my heart, personally, I feel like what black people is, I think Sierra Leone is a pretty good representation of that.
I love black Nova Scotians because it's a testament to like, yo, how much... That's the nth power of black people not trusting white people. Because these motherfuckers went from Georgia and they was like, D.C. ain't far enough.
Nope.
Nah, New York ain't far enough. Keep going. Keep going.
Put them
we
in
going
Canada.
All the way. Fuck, we ain't got no shoes, but we going to Canada.
They tried it too. They were up there for a while, I think.
It's a big population to this day.
Oh, they're still up there.
Of black folks in Nova Scotia.
Oh, you know what? That's why when you watch Trailer Park Boys...
Yes, yeah.
Because that show's in the Maritimes, and that's why there's black people on that show.
It's, dude, I would love to talk to a black Nova Scotian man because...
I bet you they don't get out much.
They don't trust shit. They don't leave. They like, look...
Oh, that sounds like black people from no other place. What are you talking about? Yeah,
they different. They don't trust people.
Yeah, they don't trust anybody.
We're going to take a quick break, man. We're talking about shit, everything today. But my man David Bory on the show. This is Classic Black Dude. We'll be right back. All right, we're back right here on Classic Black Dude. It's your boy Clark Jones, a.k.a. Pod Strickland, with my guest, David Bory, the official voice of Comedy Central.
Hey, that's the...
That gig is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Like, what was your reaction when you found out? Because there used to be Kyle Kinane, a great Chicago comedian.
Yeah. I think when they told me, I was like, fuck you.
wait. Somebody...
That's my initial, for everything.
Okay.
It's like, fuck you. And then I, process it, and I'm like, oh, this is fantastic.
Right.
But, initially, I was, fuck, shut up.
Are you able to process, where you are in the game? Like, the level that you're at?
No, but I don't think anybody is.
It's, growing, right? You don't know how tall you're getting.
And you don't know, I don't know where I stack up in other people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
I just have my, view of where I'm at or whatever, but I don't know.
And also, nothing is ever what it appears to be from the outside.
Exactly. And it's comedy so complicated. And levels is so, that's such a hard thing to, You know what I mean?
Have you made any mistakes in the game yet? Have you flexed on anybody accidentally? Because you see, you come off as humble, like you wouldn't make those types of mistakes.
I haven't made flex mistakes, but other than that, I've made, I think, most of the mistakes.
I don't think
I've missed a lot of mistakes.
How do you fuck up?
Just like everything. Just like when you first get money, not knowing how to do it.
Everybody
fucks up their first money when you first start telling jokes. Like,
yeah.
Taking opinions that are too wild and I was wrong about. Just like, I think I've fucked up in every way that you can fuck up on every level.
Yeah, and it's just
And then that's like, because that's how, for me, that's like, I'm super hard-headed, so it's not so much that like, it's not so much that I was making a bunch of right moves. It's that I was making a million wrong moves.
Right.
And then I'd learn from that and get to here. So, yeah, I think I fucked up a lot, though.
Most of the time, we're not in control of this shit, man. We're nowhere near in control.
Yeah, man. And
sometimes
it's like,
little mistakes hit hard because it was just the wrong timing for you to fuck up like that.
And it's hard. Like, what we want to do is, like, I have to, like, tell myself to chill a lot because, like, I'll be so mad at myself, like, why isn't this, oh, this person's getting this so easy and I'm working so hard. And it's like,
dude,
my dream at the end of the day is something that 200 people have gotten. So, yeah, it's going to be hard. Like, you have to pay a toll. Like
200 people out of millions.
Out of how many people are doing open mic comedy back home right now?
And then you got to cut off the fact, like, mad people have direct industry connects. But people don't talk about that.
Or nepotism.
It's not cool to be like, yo, my uncle is a VP.
Or, like, how many people were just rich before this?
Rich before this.
If I'd have known, if you'd have told me the numbers on that, I don't know if I would have started doing this. Like, when I started.
Okay.
Like, if you'd have been the percent of people who were, like, either nepotism or, like, just have the resources to make this thing work, because I thought it was like, because I didn't grow up watching comedy very much.
Same.
So I thought it was like, I thought it was just a bunch of normal people. And then you're like, oh, ex-famous dude, but also his dad has generational wealth. And you're like,
ex-famous dude. That was the thing that I think gave me such a tough time in New York, that so many people came from money. And it's a language that you speak.
Yeah, it's like, and when you're not on it, it's very apparent.
And people with money can tell right away if they're talking to somebody who also came from money.
Yeah, and they can tell if you just got money.
They could tell if you are fake being broke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they know it's like.
But then you add on top of that, there's also like, there's the shorthand of like writers and being in a writer's room and like.
Right.
There's all these things culturally that they maybe know about. And I thought I knew a lot about white people until I started doing stand-up.
Yeah, yeah. And then you
go to karaoke with them and you're like, how do you all know this song?
And it's just, but that's like.
Shit like that.
That's when
know?
I sit in the back of the back of the room and I'm just like, oh, okay. Because I have a, like, my background is, I went to a black college, but my
high
school.
Morehouse, right?
Yeah.
Man, that's pretty cool, though.
It's great. And you know what's so dope?
Like, you can call yourself a Morehouse, man. You're wearing maroon and white.
Yeah.
Right now.
Talk that shit, boy. The G is silent.
It's
amazing. Yeah, I'm blessed in that way.
Do you go to homecoming?
For sure. I did a comedy show last year at Morehouse. And, like, I tried to pledge and didn't make it, so it was just kind of a flex to be like, damn, y'all watching me on stage.
That's so cool, man.
It was great.
When I was a kid, my mom's friend is from Tuskegee.
Oh,
so
okay.
we went to visit them in Atlanta, and then we went to Tuskegee. In 96, the summer of the Olympics.
Oh.
Is why I remember it so well. But, like, I wanted to go to Tuskegee until I realized I wasn't going to go to college.
Oh, why didn't you go?
Man, I left home early. It was just not in the cards.
Like, was it fucked up as a kid? I mean, as much as you could talk about it?
Yeah. It was fucked up enough that I felt the need to leave early.
Okay.
But it's better now. It just was like, it was also just like, I was like antsy to get out in the world. And
what'd you do, like, what was the, take me through from leaving home jobs-wise to comedy. Like, how'd you get to comedy?
Okay, so I left home, and I was, like, still in high school. So my buddy my friend who I was sleeping at his house, his grandpa owned parking lots in downtown Denver.
Okay.
So I would work. I would be a parking lot attendant for all the major events. So like All-Star Weekend, I was parking lot attendant.
Carmelo,
yeah,
Iverson.
Yeah, all that shit. Home and garden expos, boat shows, shit like that.
Okay.
And that gave me enough money as a teenager. Is like through high school, that kind of gave me enough money to get by. And then it was just every job. I worked at the car wash, gas stations, remodeled condos, shoveled snow, call centers. I worked at a casino. Like, the casino was the last job I had before.
That was right. All the smoke? You could smoke it.
This was in California. You couldn't smoke inside.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You couldn't smoke inside. But it was like.
How'd you get to California?
So, I was living in Elizabeth, Colorado, which is like a tiny town.
Okay.
And I got a DUI, and my parents were living in Brisbane, California, which is right next to San Francisco. And I was like,
okay,
will you let me crash there for like 6 months so I could figure it out? Because I was working like 30 miles from my house at the time.
Okay.
So without a driver's license.
That's fucked up. That's far as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was like, in Colorado, it's not as far. Like people.
But like even that's at least 30 minutes.
Yeah, so I was like, and I had been doing it, man, this is so fucked up. I had been doing it without a car for a minute, but it was like, my days were so long. So I would wake up at 6, my roommate would drive me from our house to Parker, Colorado, and then I would catch a bus to the train, and then I would take the train 4 or 5 stops into DTC, and then I would take the shuttle bus from the train to my work. It took me like 2 hours to get there.
To shovel snow?
No. This is to do. I was a call center. I worked at a call center. No. Shoveling snow is awful. And then after work, I would have to walk to the bus stop that was like 3-4 miles away.
Yeah.
And then try to figure out one of my friends getting off work to drive me back to Elizabeth. But then I like did that for a while and saved up for a car. And then I got my car and I was cruising and I got a DUI like an idiot.
What kind of car was it?
1990 Mercury Grand Marquis.
Oh shit, American.
Ooh. Oh, big too, big body,
bucket ass.
Oh, but it was like it was in pretty good shape though.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ragtop was peeling a little bit, but like you couldn't tell that from far away.
Did it have the cloth roof?
Yeah, cloth roof.
It did it sag?
It was ripping. Yeah,
it was.
Those things can't. I don't think they.
They
I don't
come
think anybody,
sagging.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as they leave the light.
Has, like, the yellow shit inside that you can see.
The rims.
But it was, like, the AC worked and, like, the heat worked. And, yeah, man, I got a DUI like an idiot.
Is that your vice? Is alcohol your vice?
I mean, when I was 22, it was everything.
What do you... I know I ain't trying to get all what the fuck on you. I'm not trying to do that.
Are we good?
But I also hate me. So like, why'd you start drinking? I knew I've been drinking for a while. That's my Marc Maron, everybody. This is just fascinating because, you know, there are comedians with authentic, like, stories that are fucked up. Like,
yeah.
And it's not, it ain't no, like, my dad was in 9/11 type shit. Like, you really had to go out and get it.
It was just hard. I just kind of grew up. It was rough growing up and stuff. So.
And I wouldn't even know. As a kid, first of all, as a kid, I thought all white people were rich. As a kid.
I did, but I had like a complicated relationship with that.
But you were in Denver too. So
not
you,
as a little kid, though.
As a little kid, this is Elizabeth?
No, this is so. I moved to Elizabeth when I was. I moved to Aurora when I was 13. I moved to Elizabeth when I was 14.
Okay.
Before then, I'm from Tacoma and Federal Way, Washington.
Oh, SeaTac.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that whole area from Tacoma to Federal Way. So pretty much where all the black people are. But
that's
then,
so crazy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
You, as a kid growing up in Chicago, you say Seattle or Denver, and I can only think of rich white people.
It's fucked up because from being from there, you felt like people had such a chip on their shoulder about that because it was like, especially growing up, like it's like Compton, Chicago, Watts.
I'll shoot you.
New Jersey. No black people anywhere else.
They ain't no gangster black movies about SeaTac.
No, man. Meanwhile, I'm like, you know, everybody's selling drugs in the parking lot, but like, you know. But also, I was living, because we moved around a lot. Like, I went to, like, between, I went to like 12 schools total, 11 schools or something like that. So we were just moving around a lot, a lot, a lot.
Okay.
So it was just like kind of stressful as a kid.
Was it, and this is the just the understanding of it from the outsider, but like, does African culture roots make it like, yo, you got to work, you got to work? All I know is the Headleys, and they, you know what I mean? So is that like, is it like that?
Ish, like as a kid, Africa just stressed me out, right?
Because yeah.
We're from Sierra Leone, so the war started when I was 5 years old.
Okay.
And then it just like, Africa stressed me out because it would be like, we'd get calls at night, you know, we'd get calls at like 4 a.m. once a month, once every other month, and then it would just be my mom hearing all the people that had died recently or whatever.
Oh, shit.
So you just like, so just being African stressed me out. And then it was like, we would always like be like, my mom would be, my mom's like a really good person. She would be like taking donations for the family and sending shit over there and like holding it down, but we had no money.
You like, so damn, I was like, can so we I'd take like, care of this here?
Yeah,
the
like, bro,
in Colorado?
Yeah. Like, I didn't have enough money to play football this year, but we sent a shipping container full of clothes over there. You get
see?
Like, you get kind of upside down in your feelings about that.
That's wild.
Yeah.
See, oh. And like, was this, pardon me if I sound ignorant.
No, that's
but fine. Like, was this like the gold arms getting cut off, the diamond?
Yeah,
stuff
yeah, that war.
Did you have family that was working in the diamond, like the birds?
Yeah, I'm from Kono District in Sierra Leone. So like that movie Blood Diamond,
yeah.
Where he found that diamond, that's where we're from.
So shit. So did
like,
you have?
So the war started there and then kind of moved out throughout the country.
What?
So like they burned my grandpa's village down like 3 times.
Just because what
just, you're just there and that's like
and you just in the way and we need you up out of here.
Yeah, dude, when I went there, you just hear crazy stories about like, you know, them coming and like taking boys from our village to be child soldiers and shit like that. And like
yeah.
We had like people in our family who were kidnapped who never got found and stuff like that. Just war. I mean, war, you know what I mean?
Missing girls too?
No, that was Nigeria, wasn't it?
That's a lot of places in Africa.
Yeah, but I mean,
sadly.
I mean, like, but I mean, this was more like just wartime.
Just war tactics. War
yeah,
practices.
Wartime stuff.
And the two sides fighting in Sierra Leone specific, it was who versus who, just for the listeners.
Man, it's really complicated. I mean, personally, I feel like it was Charles Taylor from Liberia trying to finance his war.
Okay.
But a lot of people don't. It was marked as a civil war, so it's just political unrest. So there was multiple sides trying to gain power the whole time.
This is a safe space, so we salute black leaders. What you think about Gaddafi? Like,
man, I don't
overall.
Really have any major feelings about it. I feel it seems like he might have been a puppet.
So there was something bigger than him.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't. It's like so hard for me to speak on that, to be honest.
Okay. That's fair. I'll speak on it.
What do you feel?
You
don't think he might have been a puppet for the Americans?
No, because he wouldn't join. He didn't join the World Bank.
Right.
And somehow, mysteriously, he, you know, the word is out
this
there.
This getting way deeper than I thought.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, we got to talk about this. Like
this is
direct African roots and African American getting along and having a common ground. So fuck the stereotype.
Do you feel like
there is
a common ground?
Absolutely. And there's even more to explore. I mean, we're all.
I mean,
from
the
Africa.
People are the same. Like when I went to Sierra Leone, it's like
there's
like
somebody
the behaviors in, of the people are the same.
No, there's somebody in Lagos right now who looks just like me.
Yeah, yeah.
Even
yeah,
with all the colonization and all of that, looks just same gap. Like
right.
motherfuckers are sure that I came here straight from Nigeria when they
right.
look at me, and I talk to Nigerians all the time. And it's just like the same, there's a style of dress too. Like that blood is so rich.
Man, the style of dress thing, I was looking at my cousin on Facebook. My cousins all dress better than me.
They live in
Sierra Leone. It's like the poorest country in the world.
But
bro.
You know, it's that French, it's that French influence.
Well, we
I
don't
think.
Have that though. We were a British colony.
British, and they can't dress for shit.
No, it's like, I mean, they do. I shout out to Top Boy. I like that
oh,
show.
Oh yeah, I mean, Idris could dress. I guess he's Nigerian.
Idris, First of all,
okay,
no,
set the record
this
straight.
This fucking guy is half Sierra Leone.
Really?
He's from, Google that shit right now.
I won't. He I believe never, you.
He just, I think he recently just brought some property to like try to make commercial, but he's from Sierra, like he's, which is crazy to me because he never, I've never heard what tribe he is, which is wild.
Okay.
Like if
oh,
you're
what
from,
if he's...
like I said, I was Kono 15 minutes ago.
Everybody
but...
know. Rep your turf.
But he's like, yeah, I think he claims London harder, but he's, I think it's like, I think his people are from Ghana and Sierra Leone, but I know he's half.
Yeah, I know. I knew about the Ghanaian part. I did not know about
never
the Sierra Leone.
Never says nothing about it.
Is it? Is
Which
it?
Is like, if you're from Sierra Leone, that's like, that's tribal, not tribalism because we all live, but like, it's crazy to me to be like, oh, to have never heard him be like, I'm Timney.
Is there classism with like tribal shit? Is it like, oh, you from?
Sierra Leone's pretty good about it. Like, there's like little shit. Like, I remember we were trying to get a bunch of my family was going from the village to the city.
Yeah.
And we were trying to get, like, rent a van. And it's like hard to do. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
So we're talking to people, And finally, the one guy's like, oh, you're Kono, I'm Kono too. And that's why he took us.
Okay.
So there's shit like that. But it's not warfare by any means, no. Sierra Leone is a pretty good melting pot because it's like there's also like pretty good religious, like it's mostly Muslim but there's a lot of Christians there.
Okay.
So it's like they do pretty good as far as,
but
like,
is it looked down upon to be not from this tribe? Like what's the top tribe to
I
be
mean
from?
All the tribes will tell you that, right?
Right.
It's,
oh,
like my grandma
okay.
will tell you that Timney people, RIP, my grandma will be like Timney people are, but like I mean it's everybody has their feelings about
right.
it.
Your you tribe know? Is the
we
best.
All yeah. But that's like you think Chicago is better than
no you, fuck I mean not fuck Chicago
but you know what
but,
I'm saying like but I'm, like if it's like Chicago versus Atlanta you're still
absolutely.
Gonna
yeah.
Chicago
yeah.
I think it's like a pretty similar
yeah
but that's also I grew up here man so it's kind of like I have my scope of what that is pretty limited.
I got away from or we got away from so your folks are in not Biscayne, but Brisbane. I thought.
Oh yeah,
I heard Biscayne. And I was like, yeah. Hey, Drake, don't Drake got a condo there? But you said Brisbane, so
Brisbane,
you're there in
California.
Brisbane. You get the DUI. And
come out there.
You got to go out there.
Yeah, but it's like the house is mad packed because it's like, it's my mom, my stepdad, my three little brothers, and my two sisters who had just come over from Sierra Leone.
So damn, y'all didn't even come here together. You had
it's complicated. So my sisters are. Technically my cousins, but their parents died during the war and my parents adopted them.
Okay.
So they're still here, you know, shout out Grace and Susan, they're doing good.
And it's like there's no like differentiation, like we siblings. It ain't
I mean we don't even when you go over there, cousins isn't really a word. It's just it's your brother or your sister.
I love that shit.
Yeah, there's no like so it's just like which was the part I liked the best about going over there was like I grew up here with no family.
Okay.
Like, I didn't meet any of my family till I was 17. And then I go there, and it's just like, you don't go anywhere without your family. Like, mm-hmm. We just, like, everybody moves is everywhere you go. If you want to go to the market, if you're going to go to the beach, like.
Gang.
10 deep everywhere
shit.
We go. Yeah.
What was the walk like to the market or something like that? Was that, like, 5 miles?
It was, like, so my uncle lived on a hill. He lived in Kalbatown and he lived on Mykina Hill and the hill was like it was probably a mile up the hill.
Okay.
So like if they dropped you off like if you got a taxi or something from the city they drop you off at the base of the hill. But then I was there because I was there for like three and a half months something like that. I got to know everybody like up the hill so it'd be like chill, you know what I mean?
It's like...
You'd start walking and then you'd like oh, what's up, Pastor and his wife are right here. And then, like, the dude at the dude who rented video stores and or rented videos and sold Coca-Cola, I'd stop at his and talk to him. And then I'd go see, like, Uncle TK and Esther. Like, I would just, like, I knew everybody. So yeah. It's just, like, you know, it's like your
it's
neighborhood.
It's not like you just walking straight up a hill nonstop.
No,
you stop in at the pastor crib,
yeah,
you grab a Coke.
Yeah, yeah. It's like your neighborhood. It's just, like, navigating. You know what I mean? It's like walking home.
It takes a village.
Takes a village,
it
yeah.
Takes a fucking
Yeah.
See, I didn't even, man, I didn't know all this stuff. I was just like, oh, Dave's cool, man. But, like, this is examining. Because you're very, I would say you're an observational comedian.
Yeah, my comedy's not really about
personal.
It's not very personal.
Was that a choice or is that just your sensibility?
I think that sometimes I have, like, this chip on my shoulder where I'm like, I don't want anybody to be able to say he only got that because of that.
Okay.
So I'm on some like, nah, man, I'll do it. Hands behind my back. I'll do it as good as you do.
Okay.
Which is like probably maybe to my detriment sometimes. I don't know. Maybe not. It's worked for me.
I mean, yeah, no. It's just like, voice.
And when I started, like right when I started comedy, I was just coming off of like, my life had been really crazy for a few years before.
Okay.
So I just didn't really know how to talk about that.
But you knew how to talk about, oh, that shit look crazy. Let me talk about that.
Yeah, like, oh, girls are weird to me or whatever I was talking about back then.
Who was the influence? This is the question. Who did you feel like you were doing an imitation of when you started comedy?
See, that's crazy, man. I didn't grow up watching stand-up comedy.
Okay.
So at first, nobody.
You were just up there talking.
I just was okay, this is how you write a joke, I guess.
Okay.
And then I just so like
learn by doing. Kind
so
of
there thing. Was nobody. But then once I started going back and looking at people, I mean, I still to this day nobody's had a bigger effect on me. Once I saw Patrice, once I saw Elephant in the Room, because I was like, oh, I didn't know he's just talking, but he's so nice at it. Like I was like, oh, that's like pretty cool. So probably Patrice and like I don't know Rodney Dangerfield.
What? You have that's one of your influences?
Man, I don't know, man. I just get that guy. Like, when he's like, especially like sometimes you watch him and you see the way he hits it and it's like, it's not perfect or whatever you would say for stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. but him for who he is and what his voice is, you see he's like perfect. Like watching that dude do comedy is like a beautiful song. Like
yeah.
it's joke and then tie and that, like
it's just, a science to
it's
it.
It's so good. It's and so good.
He was one of those dudes,
and he was
who,
such a scumbag. Not a scumbag, but he was like
that character was perfectly laid out.
Yeah,
he was one of those guys who quit and came back.
Yeah, he quit forever.
Yeah,
he quit forever. He quit for like 20 years or something.
Like 20 years, he put the mic down and came back. Like,
and
solid.
He quit because he was a good guy. He had a family and shit. Like
it was a different time.
Yeah, and it's like a guy like that I look up to, and I'm like, oh man, that's like. I feel your heart, man. You seem like a good guy.
Who you like now?
What do you mean like?
Like comics, who you like now? Who you like watching? It's hard for me to watch people.
Yeah, it's just like my friends.
Yeah.
You know?
You people. Run with the guys, the AFE guys.
Yeah.
Ian, Mike
we don't
Malloy.
Really do stand-up together that much. My stand-up's like by myself. Like,
are you a lone wolf?
No, I got faded every Friday night.
we gonna talk about your plugs.
But no, I don't. I've been going on the road by myself for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So maybe in that aspect, I guess, like, we did an AFE tour this year, and that was cool. And, like, I'm opening for Eric Andre. But that's the first big tour I've ever opened for anybody else for.
I mean, like, when I say that, I mean, like, in the process of it or, like, in the...
Like,
the,
writing?
The daily life of... Like, I'll go to a mic by myself. Like, I'll go to... a show just to watch, but I don't necessarily need a pack in that way
to go and
do things.
Honestly, I hate it makes me sound so bad, but like lately, I don't even need to. If I'm not doing a show, I'm not going even to comedy.
Okay,
comedy's like really, I have a really hard time with it. It's like I don't think that it's in a good place right now, and it frustrates me a lot.
What place do you think it's in?
I don't feel like there is as much original content as that. Everybody seems to be coming up from the same angle, and it didn't used to feel like that. And it's not. And what's difficult is that angle that everybody is coming at it from definitely aligns with my personal beliefs, and somehow I still find it boring because of that.
So you know what almost, I mean? Like you almost got to step out.
We all hate Trump. Who cares?
I don't know. Even mention him by name.
Yeah, or like, or just everything. Women should have equal rights. Yeah. Yas queen. It's all, I like.
Yas queen.
Or whatever. It's just like, it's like.
Lizzo.
If that's what we're all saying, then fuck, man. That's not funny either. Well. You know what I mean?
I look at it from the angle of, I look at it as an opportunity. Like, and I have an addiction to making things harder for myself than I need to.
I feel you.
You know what I mean? It's a really just a disabling disease where I have to be like, oh, it's difficult. Let me try that. Right. Beginning with stand-up comedy. So like everybody's taking this angle and I'm always like, well, this is an opportunity for me to be like, not talk, like to stand right. out, I would think.
Right.
But also, I don't know if the game really appreciates you standing out as much as it once did.
That's what I mean, and that's like heartbreaking for me, because I'm like, I gave my fucking youth to this.
You know what I mean?
So to feel like the whole of it maybe doesn't reflect how I feel is like kind of hard to see.
Man, you know what's not hard to see? This break that we about to take real quick. And I'm the master of segues. But we here with David Bory on Classic Black Dude. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Classic Black Dude.
Man, you got good hair. Do you relax your shit?
No.
Bro.
But it's just the top.
Bro, I'm an idiot. I fucked around and put some texturizer in. I know, dude. And now I got a scab. Like, right in the kitchen where it's like the swirliest. Yeah. It's not big, but I got a scab and I'm like, man, that's like, what was I thinking?
Did it burned your shit?
I think so.
It's all good.
I wanted to be wavy. My hair's too curly.
Oh. So wait. So the relaxer like made it supposed to make it straight?
It's supposed to make it straighter. My shit's like tight. Like I can't even grow a afro. Like it's like,
I couldn't do that. It like my shit
it's so tight.
It's like I got like five different things going on. Like this is different than this, and this is different than this, and
right.
Like right in the middle is different than everything.
See, but I always wanted long hair. I could never do it.
We back, man. Were we recording all that?
Yes.
Because I love. We probably could just keep that. We talking about hair, black hair. Right here. Like, Chris Rock didn't cover that in the documentary.
Dude's
hair.
He talked about Sharpton.
A little, like, yeah, he talked about the perm, but like right now, this is like the official last haircut right now, the high fade.
That's the
Kramer. I call it the Black Kramer.
Yeah, that, man, that is.
Every black dude out here looking like Kramer
standard.
Right now.
It's like the standard right now.
And everybody got the sponge.
Oh, have you always had cool hair though?
My hair was always had a good wave pattern on top. Like when waves were in, I was popping.
But naturally.
Yeah.
Or like, were you like?
Like, no, I mean, I just wash it. Coconut oil. That's it.
Durags at night?
When I had waves, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. And I had everything. I had braids. I had locks. But I couldn't really grow. My shit was very, it wasn't like Booker T or no shit like that. It was too thin.
Okay. Because
I got real thin hair, so it was just a mess.
I've had bad hair since I left my mom's house.
Braids?
No.
Dude, that's how you got
it. It's too, my shit's too, it would take me so long to grow my hair out.
Who cut your hair for the half hour? Because that photo was it, because your half hour just dropped,
yeah,
right?
just coming out.
Who'd you go to? Because your haircut was immaculate.
I went to this place in Hollywood, but I've been good lately. So I got this guy in North Hollywood that I've been going to.
Are you? He comes to you, money?
No.
Are you?
No, I go to the shop.
Because
I like to go to the shop to listen to music
in the community
and just hear everybody talk about music or whatever is nice.
But that's a wage class, or that's a different class.
Well, I was like very like, in my mind, I thought I was like very righteous about like, you know, I just like, that's how humans, like, this is how I look. I'm just gonna, but I was just too poor to afford haircuts. So for like, fuck, probably like 10 years or something, I was not getting, I was just...
You just, like, out there.
It looked... And now I look back at pictures and shit, and it's like, I got a pretty decent natural hairline, so it was all right. But there are some pictures where I was like, that looks crazy.
Like,
it's so long.
But that was another...
And,
I
like,
think,
just, like, that's just how I look, though, you know?
That, I think... And that shit... That set you apart too, for what you're doing. I don't know if it was an intentional choice, but like, you see all these black comics and they got sharp. Everybody got the haircut, and you just like, fuck that. I ain't gotta be. Well, fuck all that pretty shit.
It was also like I was dealing with the cards I was dealt. So like, even from when I started, I was like, if I can't do this exactly how I want it, then I'll go work at the car wash. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck it. It's not. Like, if I can't do it the way that I want to do it. So it was like, there was a lot of like me, especially in the early times, me being like, yeah, fuck it. I'm broke. I didn't shower today. I sleep on a couch because what else am I going to do? I have to own it.
Did you do Flophouse?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Flophouse was a thing on Vice.
Ours was like, ours was the most real one. Like, I hate to like say that, but like, ours was like,
legitimately.
That was how our house
this
was.
This is a real Flophouse.
That party was like with all our friends.
I remember that, man. I think that was the first time that I ever saw you. And, like, I take notice. I think anybody takes notice of, like, oh, this is a black dude who, you know, got jokes. And
trying,
it's about
man.
The jokes. Cool guy with jokes.
Trying.
So, like, my senses go up because I want to make sure I'm not doing what you doing. You know what I mean? And
that's the
for
hard
anybody.
Thing about, especially you said alt black everything or whatever. Yeah. That's the hard thing is, like, there's... Not many of us in this, whatever you want to call this weird space we've managed to occupy.
Yeah.
So it's like, but it is also so that, like, when you see everybody in whatever that is, it is all very different.
I like to think so. The better they are, the more different it is. Or,
right.
Like, the more specific it is.
100%.
Like, you know, we can all say, yeah, I went to high school with mix, but like some people break down.
I mean,
like,
there's only white people and Mexican people in my high school.
I mean, but like, even if you say that, and then if you break it down and say, like, the tribe or like the type of Mexican or whatever, like, so the more specific this shit gets, the better it is. You know, open mic will be like, you know, man, I grew up with white people in high school, but like the person who really got their shit down is like, man, I grew up with trailer park white people from Elizabeth, and that's when we go,
you're
oh,
do, you're just gonna
tell
do my
me
whole
more,
half
right?
Hour.
And you yeah,
you're just gonna do my whole half
I'm,
hour.
I'm writing,
right now.
I'm writing for David Bory here on Classic Black Dude. We coming to an end on the show, man. There was
we
like,
did it. We didn't even get to the black sex.
We didn't. We could talk about that.
What, I don't know. It just says black sex.
It just says, we're looking at the agenda. It says black sex, friends, and comedy. You fuck with comics?
No.
What's your policy?
I tried.
You tried to relationship in it, or you tried to be a dirtbag?
No, I guess a couple times I have, but I try to not. But like people who are comedy, we just had this whole, we're going to pretend like we didn't have this whole talk.
What talk?
Right before,
I don't know what you're talking
right
about.
Right before the shit started.
If it's not here at Classic Black Dude, if it ain't streaming on all networks, Spotify, iTunes, podcast, then it ain't been discussed.
Yeah, I try not to. I haven't really.
It's not necessary. It's so many people.
I'm also not like wild sexy like that.
That's my new handle, Wild Sexy, 87.
You know what I mean? I'm not like, I'm like, I miss signs and shit so much. And like,
dude,
when I'm hanging out with comics, I just want to be hanging out with comics so much that like,
I
don't like, man, so many times I've been at a festival and the next morning, like everybody hooked up and I'm like, I ate a bunch of mushrooms. Like, I didn't even know.
I ain't going to act like. Because I think we did Accidental in Cleveland at the same time. And that
in that little.
That was wild sexy.
Man, see?
Know.
Bro, I didn't know. That's the thing,
it
man.
Was wild sexy.
That's the thing,
I'll admit,
man.
He got wild sexy.
I think I got like a little kid vibe or something.
Yo,
or
like
a very innocent, happy to be here vibe. I had no idea.
Here's
I
what
was
happened.
Down there. I had no idea it got wild sexy.
Here's where little by little. Mad comics two at a time started peeling off because everybody was partying.
Yeah.
And then all the shows were done. I'm DJing and like
and we the had that drinks little lounge.
Were free. The lounge, yeah. The drinks were free, and you just saw motherfuckers like, where did so? Okay, they gone, they gone, and they gone.
I didn't even know.
And
bro.
You just there to the end,
yeah,
having fun.
Oof. I mean, when you say it like that, damn.
I've been that guy.
He said having fun.
Dude, I've been that night was incredible, but I have been cuz I miss signs too.
I'm steady that guy.
Sometimes on purpose.
I also though, man, I also like for real, I've always been someone who separated work and
hell yes.
home. So like comedy, how much it mixes fucks me up because like When I worked at Target or whatever,
this nigga worked at Target.
Of course, I worked at Target. Everybody worked at Target. Bro, I had to push cart. Man, I have a
what department? Everyone.
Bro, okay.
Pharmacy.
So I was not. You have to be skilled. I was a cashier, right?
Okay.
And they would make me push carts sometimes. There was a full time cart pusher who was like special needs.
Okay, that's acceptable, everybody.
And he got fired for yelling at a kid. And then I was a full-time cart pusher. And I was like, yo, okay, so there's a list of everyone in the company.
What type of business model? So they
I'm just saying it was like special needs dudes gets fired. Who's the next available person?
Oh, you're right beneath that.
It was me. It was David. It was like, let's get David to do it. I was like, man, I felt bad about that.
Fuck that.
I wrote a short film about it.
Oh, yeah. You just had the short film from there. What's the name of it?
It's called The Lot. It's going to be online probably when this comes out.
Shit. Yeah, no. It'll be, I hope so. We'll probably get this out soon. We usually do Jeopardy form, but today we're going to do Break That Lyric Down.
Oh,
boy. So three, you're a hip-hop head.
Yes, sir.
So, like, well, I'll just do three lyrics. And you just tell me what you take those lyrics to mean.
Okay.
You know, we'll start simple. Okay. All right, we'll start with the very famous Kanye lyric. Little was known in Sierra Leone and how it relates to the diamonds that we own. So when you heard that, what was your initial reaction to it?
You're full of shit. You still wear diamonds all the time.
Okay. All right, you're talking about Kanye.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me.
No. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song I thought was stupid. Because, like... Yeah. You don't.
You did that for the bars. You didn't do that for
don't
the.
Yeah, don't do that to me. You know what I mean? That's how I felt when that song was out.
So you didn't feel
no,
flattered
man, I felt
by
no
that.
Type of flattery or kinship or that he had that kid speaking Creole in the beginning of. No. Nothing.
Shit.
Nothing to like.
Nothing about that way that song made you go, see, he gets it.
Not. What proves he, you?
He ain't stopping it.
Yeah. What are you talking? No, it's just like, it's a cool thing to say.
Okay, that's lyric number one. That's what we're starting off with. Next lyric, Nipsey Hussle lyric from Status Symbol 3. And Nipsey, rest in peace, Nipsey, man. One of my favorite MCs, but he goes, I ain't trying to lie. I ain't even flexing. Block for me, black man. No, they trying to stretch us. What's that mean?
Say it again.
I ain't trying to lie. I ain't even flexing. Block for me, black man. No, they trying to stretch us.
It feels like it just means, like, we got to work together, man.
Community, right?
Yeah, you know they're coming at us, like, block for me. I'm going to hit the A-gap or whatever sport you're talking about. But you know what I mean?
That was a very direct reference. That was good.
I played football.
Oh, shit. Yeah. The A-gap is the first hole?
Yeah, A-gap is off the center.
Right. So, like, when you see that
and
running
then
back.
B is off the guard. But, yeah, it's like block for me. Like we're in it together, man. Like I he embodied that. More than anybody.
If I got it, I'm ahead of you. I'm going to make sure you can get in. Because nobody makes it in this thing. No matter what a motherfucker. And even if it's your uncle, your cousin, somebody blocked for you.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't have a third one. So that's how we going to end the podcast,
man.
All right,
that was good, man. Thank you for having me.
I hope you had fun. Tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram at CoolGuyJokes87. You can find me on Twitter at the G is silent, although not that much anymore, man. That's just, it's toxic over there.
It is real daily over on Twitter. And you could plug your pod, too.
Oh, yeah. All Fantasy Everything is a great podcast that I'm a co-host of. And Faded Comedy every Friday night in Los Angeles.
At the Mid-City Arts Center.
Yeah, but we might be moving.
But y'all might be moving, so stay in tune.
Yeah.
You got the half hour coming out.
The half hour coming out.
You showed up in on the Jumbotron. In Times Square.
Yeah, and I'm going to be on a billboard on Sunset, apparently.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, I got to go take a picture. Everybody's going to New York to take a picture there, so I'm like, I'm not flying.
They're going to New York?
A few people.
See, these motherfuckers got money, man.
I guess so, man.
Either way, I'm rooting for my brother Dave to have his own. Is it just you, or are they gonna have everybody who did it?
I think it's everybody.
You gonna get your own shit. We gonna get our own shit. I can't wait. One Classic day. Black Dude is right outside the
that
comedy
picture.
Store. Yeah,
that's
hopefully.
Vision, yeah.
At the Clark Jones, where you can find me, Classic Black Dude on all formats, and like, comment, subscribe to this podcast, and man, I'm so thankful. This has been great, and it's your boy Clark Jones, aka Pod Strickland, right here on Classic Black Dude. Thank you.